Bay's Tennis Podcast, episode 186. I'm Steve Smith, along with
Ivan Zdrets.
Pronounce that name so well. Steve Smith, what a boring name. Say your name one more time.
Ivan Zdrets.
Ivan, bright, bright guy. He's the man behind the scenes with the podcast. The podcast. Everybody and their brother has a podcast. And believe me, I know I'm an amateur. But last week, we had on Lisa Pugliese Lacroix, who played tennis with Andy Brandy. Mm-hmm. And there's some time constraints. I hope you've had a chance to listen to Lisa. What a remarkable person. Why don't you make a comment on last week's podcast?
I was just happy to be part of it. Hear her story and what she's doing now with Love Serves Autism, her nonprofit organization. Just super grateful to hear her story and know that people like her are out there, and just thankful and grateful for her.
Andy Brandy, 1952 to 2024. I think that's right. I did read 1951, but I believe he's part of that 1952 age group. Kyle Lacroix, Lisa's wife, sent me a text and like, whoa, Andy Brandy. So some of the things that we said during the podcast with Lisa, that was also a tribute to Andy, but some of the things may be repeated. But I've got a bunch of notes here, and let me go. Andy Brandy, passion, consumed by the desire to get better. Was told he was working at Jay Berger's club 3 days a week. He was on the court the day before, or just days before his death. Andy Brandy, the age group, arguably to the best age group ever, 1952. When you think of age group in tennis, it's a two-year period. And I'm sure I'm forgetting a name here, but Harold Solomon, Eddie Dibbs, Brian Godfrey, Dick Stockton, Roscoe Tanner, Sandy Mayer, Jimmy Connors. Not too far behind them, again, forgetting a couple names, but Vitas Gerulaitis, Gene Mayer, John McEnroe, Peter Fleming, all those players ranked top 10 in the world. Now, tennis has become much more global since then. Since then, this would have been in the 70s. The fall of communism, the Berlin Wall coming down, and the explosion of tennis in Eastern Europe. I knew Andy Brandy 47 years. I met him in 1997 at Stowe, Vermont. We worked for a company called All American Sports, a company that once employed Nick Baldessari and Harry Hopman at the same time. Mr. Hopman was in charge of juniors. Nick Baldessari, he was in charge of adults. When they worked together, it was Amherst College. Reinie Meyer was the go-between. Fifth grade teacher from Wisconsin. The company, All American Sports, was at multiple sites. Basically, it was throughout the Northeast in the summer, Florida in the winter. They did have a couple of international sites. When I met Andy, I also met his brother, Joe. I was a neophyte. I met Andy, who I spent more time with than Joe. I'm not sure how many years older Joe is than Andy. But Andy was 24. I was a neophyte. I was not new to sport through my family and through my youth. I had 15 years of time and experience in ice hockey, but I was new to tennis for sure. When I met them, I would say that I was well-read. I knew who Welby Van Horn was. I knew Charlie Passerell was taught by Welby. Charlie Passerell, Arthur Ashe's buddy, Arthur Ashe said, you can tell a Welby Van Horn student a mile away. Go to YouTube. Charlie Passerell played a remarkable match against Pancho Gonzalez. The summer I met then was the summer the best players in the world came to Stowe, Vermont, beautiful place, as a tune-up for the U.S. Open. It was just a matter of days, if not the week before. Basically, Joe and Andy knew all the players, and all the players respected them. They respected their backgrounds. You think of Daniel Coyle's book from the Talent Code, where you'd say a special pocket, a place that truly produces. Maybe it's a violin player. maybe it's a gymnast, but when Jimmy Connors played at Stowe, he won. I remember he played against Bob Lutz. Bob Lutz is a great tennis player. To digress, Bob Lutz is a player, played doubles with Stan Smith, played at USC. They were ranked one in the world, won multiple tournaments. And Vic Braden called up Bob Lutz and said, I'd like to use you on a PBS tennis tip, because PBS didn't have commercials. And Bob Lutz said, well, no, I don't hit the underspin backhand the way you teach. And Vic was a little disappointed, but he called him back and said, let's just film you and we'll show it. And Vic hung up the phone and goes, we got him. But anyway, did play poorly against Bob Lutz. Bob Lutz is an amazing tennis player. And at that time, sitting with Brandy, Joe, the older brother, he held court. In other words, he was the one telling us what was happening. And again, being such a newbie to tennis, it was a small group, but it was transformational for me. Jimmy kept missing, but he was attacking constantly. He was forcing, he was dictating. And over the years, I think I've heard Jimmy Connors say this 1,000 times. And that goes back 5 decades. I'm playing the way I was taught to play. Jimmy Connors, Andy Brandy. Andy beat Jimmy twice in the 12s. And I heard that, I mentioned this last week. Used to say that the best match Andy Brandy ever won was marrying his wife, Nancy. Everybody loves Nancy Brandy. I remember when the topic came up, Andy had beaten him. At the time, Jimmy was the best in the world. And true Andy Brandy competitive spirit and intensity said, yes, my friend, but I never, never lost to him in backgammon. Taught for Andy at Silvermont at Boca West in the West Hampton Bath Tennis Club on Dunes Road. Oceanside Club, seaplanes and yachts would come. Probably the toughest challenge, probably is a weak word, that's what I tell juniors. One of the toughest challenges I've faced in my tennis teaching career. Andy was the director of tennis. I was the camp director. I worked for Andy. And the guests and members, the first 3 weeks, it was fine. Because in New York State, the kids go to school to the end of June, the third week, last week of June. So I would say the first 3 weeks, everything went fine. Our camp was on a 4 clay court setting on the inlet. So courts up front, the road, the hotel across the street, the ocean. 99%, I would say the group was from Manhattan. Demanding group. And so, but when the kids were out of school, so the members showed up. We were just there the first 3 weeks of the month of June, even the Labor Day, the Memorial Day weekend. And it was just the guests. But when the members came in, the members won. So as the camp director, I remember I had to run the camp on 2 hard courts instead of 4 clay courts. But with Andy, the argument, the debate, 1977, Vic Braden's book came out, Tennis for the Future. And Vic Braden had entered everybody's living room. And certainly, so many magazine articles. At one time, Vic was on the cover of Tennis Magazine twice a year. But then I found out that was free advertising, because he would write the articles, and I found out over the years how that worked. Eve Kraft, who used to run the education research for the USTA, she wrote a book, and there was a segment about Welby. Jim Layton wrote a book, Inside Tennis, Winning Techniques. So Annie would say, Welby is the best. And I'd say, okay. I thought Vic Braden was the best. And anyway, you learn from everybody. But from that, I went to work for Welby Van Horn. It was a summer job. And at that time, working for All American Sports, I had a pretty good situation, you know, being paid such and such, and, you know, living in Florida in the winter and New England or the Northeast in the summer. And I remember my father saying, well, what are you going to do? I said, well, I'm going to go work for Welby Van Horn. And it was literally for $125 a week. And then when that was over, I was unemployed. So my father was wondering, well, I don't think he's the smartest kid I have. changing my mind. He thought I was smart because I got out of the upstate New York winters. I just had to call up Philip Eisenberg, who owned the Welby Van Horn tennis camp. But by circumstance, I ended up spending a lot more time with Welby because my parents had retired near the Pinehurst Hotel, and Welby's camp was moved from the Choate School in Connecticut to the Pinehurst Hotel. And then I was running an academy, Scuzzo Bassett, and then Welby's summer camp moved again. And it was at the Boca Raton Hotel and Club. And then I spent a lot of time with Welby in his nursing home. So unlike Andy Brandy and his brother Joe, Manny Diaz, who just announced for the University of Georgia that he's going to retire, he's been there for 36 years and, you know, Hall of Fame career, been a guest on our podcast, I was a Welbyite, but not like they were. I mean, they grew up with Welby as kids. It's very interesting. It's a different learning path to learn to teach tennis from someone than to learn to play tennis. It benefits both on both sides. So I would say, yeah, I definitely became a Bradenite because after I worked for Welby, I ended up spending all sorts of time with Vic Braden. With developing players, I think people should write this down if you're in the tennis teaching business. Developing players versus developing developed players. With, I heard Andy on a podcast from 6 months before his death, just recently, that he went from pros to college players. So from pros to college players, back to pros, and then to juniors. And then from there with the USTA, even younger juniors. Actually, when I was working with Andy, we taught recreational adults. There was no homeschooling. You teach juniors at a camp setting. You know, they certainly would take private lessons and some afternoon programming. There's so many positives in teaching beginners. There's so many positives in teaching people that have played several years. Today, just for a few minutes, I was observing an adult clinic. It was eight women up here in the mountain, wintergreen, having a weekend retreat. And you know, to have that be educational, be instead of a service, it's a different challenge. With tennis teaching, there's, say, now we have academies, we have college players, and we have pros. I would say that teaching is political, complex. It's just not straightforward. When you're teaching a beginner, it should be pretty straightforward. You're not inheriting, you know, someone who's played, you know, 5-10 years of tennis. Andy, he worked at Mr. Hopman's. He worked at IMG that years ago, known as Bollettieri's. And he was also a partner with one of those players I mentioned, Harold Solomon, who I believe was number 5 in the world. Some of the terms, like say when Andy was with the USTA, there'd be short-term players just coming in for a clinic, a camp. I wouldn't say there would be drop-in players, but they're coming back to that. They're developed players, players that are selected to visit the national campus. So they're inherited perhaps, or invited, recruited, cherry-picked, selected, whatever the term is. But one thing I want to talk about is at the University of Florida, I know Yvonne read it last week. We're going to read it again, the results with Andy Brandy. It's worthy of being in the Hall of Fame. Andy, once again, was working with developed players. And let me say the challenge of that. I actually say quite often they feel sorry for college coaches. You know, they bring someone in, they give them a scholarship, and they don't even know where to stand when they play doubles. They played one up, one back doubles throughout their junior career. Certainly selected because they're perhaps athletic, big, strong, fast character. They're the it thing. They've won a lot of matches. I think it's more difficult to work within a player's game versus with a player's game. I think, you know, a Welby Van Horn and a Vic Braden, others like a Dennis Vandermeer, there's so much alike. There's so many similarities between these top coaches from the past. And that's basically what we're trying to do with the Great Base, is honor coaches from the past with, you know, working within a player's game versus like, okay, directly, this is the grip, this is the unit turn, these are the basics, these are check the checkpoints. If people make a deep dive into what we share via the Great Base pathway, Great Base curriculum, they would see that in very fast order, we can teach someone how to have a solid fundamental base, but then do they practice? What Andy built at the University of Florida, though, I would say was straightforward. He wasn't starting with beginners. His players were not starting from scratch, but the results, when you read the results at the University of Florida.
Yeah. I got some results here. Andy Brandy led the Gators to 3 NCAA national titles, 92, 96, and 98, and to 6 national team indoor championships, 89, 91, 92, 96, 98, and 99. He also guided the Florida women to 14 Southeastern Conference titles in his 17 seasons. Brandy, a 2006 Gator great and inductee into the University of Florida Athletics Hall of Fame, was the first Florida coach to lead one program to 3 NCAA titles. His win-loss record at University of Florida was an astonishing 460-43, a winning percentage of 91.4%, including 196-6 record in the Southeastern Conference dual matches, 97%. His championships titles, the NCAAs, like we mentioned, 92, 96, 98, Southeastern Conference, 85, 86, 87, 88, 90, 91, 92, 93, 95, 96, 97, 98, 99, 2001. And the Southeastern Conference tournament was won as well in 90, 91, 92, 93, 95, 96, 97, 98, and 2000. His awards: SEC Coach of the Year in 87, 88, 93, 96, and 98. USPTA National Coach of the Year in 88. USPTR National Coach of the Year in 96 and 98. ITA National Coach of the Year in 89 and 96. And like we've mentioned, University of Florida Athletic Hall of Famer.
Wow. With chronological order, I would not be the person to go through Andy's career in chronological order. Obviously, that's documented. But after our time with All American Sports, Andy did some time. He worked for Donald Dell, legendary Donald Dell, who's done absolutely everything in tennis. That was in a club setting, Potomac, Maryland. But then from there, he was working for Mr. Hopman, and he was working with a player, Bonnie Gaduzak. She was a gymnast who transferred to tennis. She became number 8 in the world. Her game, certainly, you know, think of Nick Baltieri at one time calling Welby's tennis classical. They both were on the island of Puerto Rico for some time, not working together, but she certainly did not. First of all, my train of thought. One time in Tennis Magazine, Nick Baldessari said, "I never understood the Welby classical stuff." And I wrote a letter that was published in the next article, the next monthly issue of Tennis Magazine. And I think it was published because, I had worked for Welby and Nick had hired many students that I trained. And I said, because you just speculate what would have happened at the voluntary program if those young players coming up and so many legendary players, they just, Aaron Krigstein, Jimmy Arias, Jim Courier, Andre Agassi, Monica Sellers, and on and on. Is what would have happened? But here are some players that Andy worked with. Carlene Bassett, number 8. Jay Berger, number 7. Jimmy Arias, number 4. This is in the world. Aaron Krigstein, round of 16 at the U.S. Open at the age of 16. Lisa Raymond, number 1 in doubles. Year-end ranking at number 15. Our fact checker, pretty sure at one time she was ranked top 10, but not year-ending. Elena Dentimieva.
That sounds good, yeah.
It is. Number 3, number 2 in the world. I mean, 2 or 3 in the world. Olympic gold medalist. Even players like Riley Opelka, Francis Tiafoe, Taylor Fritz, Tommy Paul. With back in the day with Andy Brandy, because I could work around the clock, I think I had Andy's respect. I mean, I had to make the camp go. He was in charge of everything. And if I could make the camp go, that meant he could deal with the private clientele. Again, we're so young. He's 24 years old. He's already married. He's 22. And my expression or my comment would be, what would Welby say? And I mean, like everyone, I called Andy. But in certain situations, I would say, hey, Brandy, what would Welby say about your horse's backhand volley? And Andy would say, Steve, it's so political. Meaning that he'd be at a tournament, he'd be watching one of the better kids in the United States. And I would just come up and go, hey, what would Welby say? I do the same thing, watch people play and go, what would Braden say? You watch a match, what would Jack Kramer say? Either Pancho Segura, Pancho Gonzalez. I gave this assignment out. I'm pretty sure I'm correct. And you can get on YouTube and watch a major tournament, like say the recent Australian Open. Yannick Sinner, what a classy champion. He wins it. I'm pretty sure he only hit one backhand volley in 5 sets. Well, why would that be? And there's just so many things. So many things, so many reasons why that would be. Coming back to this, this is a junior player, but a pro player, backhand volley, same thing. Hey, Brandy, what would Welby say about your horse's backhand volley? On our podcast, Manny Diaz, I asked him the same question in a different way. What would Welby say about John Isner's backhand volley? You'd have millions more in the bank if you hit the volley the way Welby taught it. Grip determines the angle of the racket face. Angle of the racket face determines the angle of the racket path. By no means are we criticizing John Isner, but from an educational standpoint, I was in a meeting with the USTA many years ago. Rob Krychek set it up. And I said, well, would you want to have the Sam Querys of the future? What a great player he was. Big time. Big time player. You're a big time player if you're making $20,000 a week. Would you want the future players with his height, his serve, to have the same type of flaws on the backhand volley? Riley Opelka has been out with juniors. Things on my mind with Riley Opelka, and he had some reasons that would make it a debate, and they should drop doubles. Hopefully he gets healthy again. With his serve and his size and the way doubles is played, I don't think he'd want them to drop doubles. They, ATP, WTA. But like, say, a Tommy Paul, a Taylor Fritz, and a Tiafoe. I mean, they're top players in the world now. Knocking on the door to be top 10, maybe Taylor Fritz is already there. But if you could turn the clock back and go, okay, if they were to be developed, not be developing players, So when do you inherit a player? When do you start a player? Say Andy's son, Chris, obviously, and same thing with Manny's son, Eric. I know he has more than one son. Andy just had the one son with Nancy. Chris was an All-American. Eric's won nearly 100 matches. That's representing Georgia. That's big-time college tennis. So like Andy's son, Chris, Eric, they could play. Their own children were obviously once Tiny Tots, the absolute beginner. But their line of work, if you're coaching the University of Georgia, you're not working with beginners. I think parents need to understand that. They have to understand that college coaches, hopefully, they don't have to have a kid reinvent their game coming in as an 18-year-old. We meet all sorts of players. Their game is a train wreck. With Andy, I mean, I would see younger players, you know, I attended USTA functions that he was running. And, you know, not openly, but behind the scenes, it was said, Andy Welby would classify that kid as a redo. That means go back to the drawing board. Welby was so successful teaching the children of members. So a Joe Brandy, an Andy Brandy, Manny Diaz, that they grew up in that Daniel Coyle pocket of success. Kribby Hilton, Four Courts. Frank DeFord, Sports Illustrated, wrote an article. More national junior titles than the entire state of Florida over a 10-year period. With that being said, you know, Welby was, Eve Graff wrote about Welby. Jim Layton wrote about Welby. Never spoke at the USTA, never spoke at the USPTA. Even in 77, the PTR. USPTA started in 27, PTR in 77. Let's have Welby show up and talk about how to develop players from day one. Remember, kids from Puerto Rico, like Andy, they could play for U.S. titles. They could play for U.S. rankings. They had the opportunity, just like any kid in the 50 states. From a recent interview, Andy said, old-time tennis still applies. It's all the same, footwork, balance. But the time, the situation, the set of circumstances. Years ago, it was less travel, less tournaments. And again, these notes are random, but Dave Ramos, I spoke to him this week. He's a leader in the USTA and the player development side. He used the term giants. Three giants that helped his career. Tom Gullickson, Jose Garris, and Andy Brandy. Matt Clore, asked him, I was on the phone with him this week, about Andy Brandy. He said his presence, he was just so convincing. This came up last week. We were talking to Lisa Pugliese, Andy Jackson. Andy Jackson coached at Florida when Andy was there. Said his players, as well as himself, were in awe of Andy's presence and the culture that was built, the work ethic that the women's players showed the men's players. Side note, timing is everything. Andy was the main reason Matt got hired by the USTA to be a national coach. Matt's hiring was when Andy started to work with the youngest kids at the USTA. And Andy knew Matt had learned from me Welby's approach. Once you see clips through our educational content on a young kid named Victor Lillo. Lillo started with us as a beginner. When Matt started with us, he was an accomplished player taught by his father. Like all the coaches we train, we dealt with his game first, filmed his strokes. He made changes. Coming back, Steve Spurrier, the former football coach, he once cut his football practice short so his team and staff could take in the competitive spirit of Andy's team. Former AD, Jeremy Foley, said Andy Brandy is one of his all-time favorite coaches. Once went by the track at the University of Florida, Andy was running behind his girls, yelling, "You don't dare let me pass you." Lisa mentioned the intensity. Some odds and ends. I remember getting a phone call from Andy, and the only purpose of the call was everybody in tennis at that time is watching Roger Federer at the US Open. And it's like, can you believe this guy's balance? Welby Van Horn, he's on balance in an off balance position. Eric Diaz made an attempt to study Alex Mickelson's game. Manny's son, Eric, is coaching him. And I looked at a few videos. It was just amazing how often you use the word balance. Again, random. Andy Brandy, once he was late, and he was never, ever late. With his wife, Nancy, they got stuck in traffic. This was in the Hamptons. I organized the camp I was running and started Andy's private. Andy showed up. I remember he was so appreciative. He was so concerned that he was going to show up late for a lesson. I doubt there were many other times in his entire life that he's even a minute late. He's so professional. Again, random. Jillian Alexander, she's an NCAA doubles champion from Jamaica, raised in Canada, died of cancer at 36. I was in Toronto and where I work, we hosted a PTR test certifying about 20 pros. I myself was a tester with the PTR, but I was writing programs for the upcoming summer. So I sat in the back while she conducted the workshop. I was in Toronto for a couple of years because my two boys were playing ice hockey. At the end, with Richard Hernandez, his staff, we had dinner with Jillian Alexander. I told her I had worked for Andy 20 years before, and we get this right. It had been about 20 years beforehand. And that was 20 or so years ago. Again, I knew him for 47 years. Through that, I found Andy really loved. Jillian said Andy fell in love with all the progressions that Dennis Vandermeer had. So obviously Andy Brandy, a lifelong learner. Here's something about work ethic. There's so many things that's Andy Brandy, if you think of him as work ethic. Andy's teammates at Trinity, we put this on Facebook the other day. Amazing the tennis that the Brandys were born into. Godfrey was number three in the world, Brian Godfrey. He had the finals of the French, semis of Wimbledon. Dick Stockton got to be number eight in the world. He got the semis of Wimbledon. I was doing a clinic for Bill Jacobson. I was charting parents on how to, teaching parents on how to chart matches. And I was in Dallas. At the time, I was in Tyler, Texas. I took some students. And it was raining. One of the other players, Bill McGowan, was there. And I said, hey, come and tell us a story. And the story was adversity quotient. We use that all the time with juniors. How much can you take? Can kids take coaching? You're talking about Lisa Pugliese and helping kids with autism. It'd be great to have these kids who get too much attention as they're brought up to be competitive tennis players. Adversity. You know, we always ask people, would you like to be mopping floors at McDonald's? You know, should we go walk through the child's ward of the hospital? But Gottfried and Stockton, Clarence Mabry's culture at Trinity, he was the coach. They practiced four times a day. One session was just hitting serves and returns. This is a story their teammate told us. Went to the regular practice. They had another practice, but they also played one set. And in their dorm room, on the outside of the door, they had one of these yellow line pieces of paper. And they played a set a day. And the goal is, okay, we're going to play 100 sets. They got to the finals of the NCAA that year, but they both were top 10 players in the world. But I'm sure with Andy's family and just, you know, growing up with Welby, he learned a work ethic long before he went to Trinity, but that's an amazing story. Again, born into tennis, Julie Anthony's book. Julie Anthony became a very good tennis player, went on to get a PhD in psychology, sports psychology. In her book, she said that Joe is number 33 in the U.S., 18s. And he had polio, and one leg was shorter than the other. I never even discussed that with either Brandy. Their cousin, I never asked that either. I think maybe Charlie Passereau is not their cousin, but they referred to each other as cousins because Welby created a family of tennis players. But Charlie Pastorell went to his mother and said, I want to quit because Welby was being too tough. I have some notes here where Andy, when he was coaching the University of Florida, he said, I was demanding. It was a tough cookie. I just pushed and pushed. That's why they had so much success. But Charlie's mother, Mrs. Pastorell, said, if your cousin Joe can play on one leg, you can put up with Mr. Van Horn's toughness. Myers-Briggs, that's a tool that we use. It's not scientifically validated. But I'd say Andy was either an INTJ, applicator of ideas, or an ENTJ, a CEO, cannot not lead. I was at the famous tournament in Miami, and I was with some juniors. It's like, okay, what am I going to do? I usually look around and say, okay, where's the most learning? And generally, it's not watching a match. So at that time, Andy was working with Lisa Raymond and Martina Navratilova. He wasn't working necessarily with Martina, but they were playing doubles together. So I guess you could say, yeah, they're definitely working together in that sense. But a skill I have is to be a fly on the wall, is to be the observer's observer. So I didn't have a speaking part, and I just kept myself off to the side. But every time they practiced, when I was there, down in Miami, I was there. Lisa had Andy as a coach. Martina had what looked like an entourage. And at that time, those practice sessions, Martina, she was the one doing all the talking. And I think an older Andy Brandy learned to take a back seat. No doubt he had many things to say. But yeah, we let the other person do the talking. How's it go? You can learn more by listening than by talking. I heard this so many times when someone was questioning Andy. Year three, people know Brandy a long time, Andy Brandy. Talking tennis, discussion, debate, hopefully not an argument. We've learned to stay away from arguments because we know the Vic Braden theme. Dimensions of the court and physical laws dictate stroke progression. No coach's opinion or any unique theory. But someone was questioning Andy, he would say, let me tell you, my friend. Just hear him saying that. Let me tell you, my friend. Here's another one. I hate to say this, but you are wrong. Dead wrong. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. Yeah, I think that young coaches, if they could find a way to learn from people that, or learn from those who learn from Andy. Here's another one. Are you kidding me? You can't be serious. That makes absolutely no sense. People who knew Andy from a different era would recognize those Andy Brandy lines. Towards the end of his life, he spent a few years at LSU. My opinion would be very strong that the women at the University of Florida, the Gators of the 1990s, would be much tougher than the LSU Tigers, the men of the 2020s. We have to, like Dave Anderson said on our podcast, the theme would be, we have to go back to the future. Chris Everett, what a champion. I always say this about Everett. She wins the Canadian Open and her name goes up on the list of champions. And she reads in the name of champions that her father won the tournament. And she never knew her father won the tournament. That has to be one of the best lessons of humility. But Andy led her academy. She had a nice tribute on social media to Andy. Says she learned so much from him. In Welby's day, there was almost no two-handed backhands. I remember Welby handing out a sequence of 8 frames of Chrissy's two-handed backhand. He applied his 3-8 system balance. Heel, hip, and head. You know, the heel represents weight transfer, the hips, body rotation, the head, even distributed between the shoulders, balance. Welby figured out in no time. He's such an intellect. His analysis. He did. It's amazing what Welby Van Horn did without slow motion film. He figured out in no time that two-handed backhand is a left-handed forehand. I would ask Andy, see him periodically, and I'd say, hey, Brandy, How many girls at the Chris Everett Academy could beat Chris Everett? I know you're not supposed to assume, but assume means to make an ass out of you and me. I think that it's a safe bet that when Chrissy was in the 50s, she just hit the ball so deep, so consistent. It would be hard-pressed for a junior to beat her. Of course, she'll be 70 at the end of this year. And Joe Brandy, 1990, he was signed to work with Pete Sampras. My recollection at that time, Pete was spending time at Baltieri's. Perhaps that's because he was managed by ING. Nick and Welby both, as we mentioned, they lived in San Juan at the same time. For several years, Nick primarily taught adults. Welby primarily taught juniors. Brandy's, Joe and Andy, were disciples of Welby. But Nick respected Joe's background, just like Andy. Andy traveled with many young pros that were based at Nick Baltieri's. But Nick respected Joe's background so much, he ends up being assigned to work with Pete Sampras. Pete Sampras, with Joe Brandy coaching, and wins the U.S. Open. Christina Brandy grew up early years at Hopman's, formative years were at Baltieri's. So she was really a tiny tyke. Because I remember spending time at an open door invitation to go observe at Hopman's. At one time, Christina was practicing at our tennis school in Tampa. Asked her to play a couple tiebreakers at lunchtime in front of a bunch of campers. But keep in mind, she represented Puerto Rico in the Olympics. Brandy Brand represented Puerto Rico in the Olympics. She was 27 in the world. So another example of Brandy's success. And what she said to me was, she said, "Are you sure you want me to play in front of the students?" Because I would say that she, and remember, this comes from Joe, is that she developed in the jungle. She developed in an academy where back in the day, literally hundreds of kids. Jim Lehrer talked about that, has talked about that many times. His son Jeff was there. Nick Baltieri, there's a lot of positives to it. He's in the Hall of Fame based on environment, the environment he created. More odds and ends with Andy Brandy. His tennis team, half a bagel. No freshman 15. It's true in school cafeterias. There's going to be more carbs than protein. And it's not just the gals, but college freshmen have a tendency to put on weight. Eat slow, eat less. I was told, never asked him this, but he was reprimanded in his early years at the University of Florida that it was not appropriate to use the word fat. I think of a young guy that I helped with his game, Corbin Archer, 100 years ago. He coached short-term in college tennis. And he just had a few things. He had a lot of success coaching a college girls team, again, a short period of time. And I remember one thing was going to get the girls to be able to run. You got to be able to be fit. There's two sides to every story. I mean, obviously, you have to be careful. Anorexia and bulimia. This is something that helped Craig Tiley out. Tiley was with us for a long time. I'll tell you why. Kathy Rinaldi, she was 7 in the world. And those two, Kathy and Andy, helped out each other so much. But Kathy was at one time based at the University of Florida. So just imagine someone goes on a recruiting trip and a player is top 10 in the world, is practicing with the players on campus. Tyler, you worked so hard for us. Came in as a student assistant. Just did so many things. 7 years is a long time. And through that and through Russell Seymour, we had, Russell was in charge of South African tennis. But we had people like John Lafondiaga, Jeff Coetzee, who later became Davis Cup players. And Tiley, in a lot of ways, just unknown in South Africa. He wasn't a player of that caliber. And he's a college student in the U.S. And he becomes Davis Cup captain. And boy, did that help him out from a recruiting standpoint. I watched Kathy take lessons from Frank Froehling. Frank Froehling was ranked 6th in the world. I can remember I was just young and trying to learn, and you know, they used to teach, you know, forehand on edge, shake hands in the back, shake hands in the front. It was a 180 degree swing on a 20 degree court. So, but years ago, people did teach a ready position, a unit turn, a backswing, a contact point, a follow through. But just being an observer, Frank, you know, he was teaching racket on edge. But both Kathy and Frank, when they would hit, they'd have the racket face closed at the bottom part of the swing. Actually, when Vic Braden came along in the 70s and told people to close the racket face at the bottom part of the swing, it was looked upon as being radical. And now, you know, people think of the Braden information as being irrelevant. Couldn't be anything further from the truth. But no, Andy, if you listen to him, you'll hear him mention, you can, that's the nice thing about the internet, is that, you know, he would read the book Tennis for the Future backwards and forwards. But Andy did start working with Catherine Aldi at a very young age, and she became a teen sensation. On one of these podcasts I listened to where Andy was interviewed, he said, you have to remember that Alcaraz's game, his game was already put together before he met Juan Carlos Ferrero. Again, Juan Carlos Ferrero, I mean, developed players, not necessarily developing players from the beginning. Compared to Chrissy Everett, I mean, Kathy Rinaldi wasn't legendary, but wow, damn good. I mean, top 10 in the world. Here's something for people who are really studying tennis. Go to YouTube, plug in Connors Everett, Vince Van Patten, Kathy Rinaldi, mixed doubles. And you'll see very quickly that the doubles is played so much differently than it is now. And it was better then. Here's a way to show you that Andy knew, you know, developing players instead of developed players, but again, set of circumstances. Stephanie Nikitas, her name was mentioned by Lisa Puglisi Lacroix last week, former Gator. Andy wanted her to spend a year with me. She stopped playing pro tennis and was going to start a college coaching career. I never met with Stephanie on this, but I met with her father because they were from Tampa. It never happened. But the reason I mentioned that, his point being that Andy knew working in the trenches with non-established players, adults or juniors, is a must. I think if you're going to be the architect, I mean, it's good if you just pound some nails straight. You know, anything, get your hands dirty, start from scratch. But that's one thing, again, that... And I was with Andy. We were doing that with tennis camps. Lisa Raymond, thoughts on her tied into Andy Brandy. Bryan Brothers called her money because they used to put all their money in the same bank account. But I believe it was Bob who won some mixed doubles titles with Lisa Raymond. She has 11 majors. So the thing was, he would tease his brother Mike, hey, it's not 50-50 because I played mixed doubles with money. Julian Krinsky's in Philadelphia. He knows Lisa Raymond, spent some time with her when she was a kid. He's been a guest on her podcast and has a lifetime in tennis. Dennis Alter, Julian hooked me up with him when we were trying to buy the Braden Library. Dennis said he would have done it if he wasn't already approaching mid-70s. But he helped fund Lisa Raymond when she, you know, came out of Florida, where she played 2 years, won 2 NCAAs. But he said, what a class act. She obviously made money fast, and she quickly paid every penny back. I actually saw her lose a match. I said earlier, I mean, perhaps last podcast, why would Andy Brandy's team be in Utah playing BYU in Utah? But they were there. And I was there doing something with the Utah Tennis Association and the late Tom Fi. So that was an experience. I had a few others, but to see Andy in his element with Florida tennis, if that could be captured and to go back to, you know, how did a player like that have so much success? I think based on that alone, Andy Brandy should be in the International Tennis Hall of Fame. As I think it's sad that, you know, just builders of the pro game, players of the pro game, other Hall of Fames, like say, for example, when Michael Jordan was inducted into the Basketball Hall of Fame, so was a woman who had been very successful coaching high school basketball. I watched his team. I went to watch one of our students who was playing at Stanford, but worked out today and spent the whole time with University of Florida. Was at Notre Dame. Sujay Lama, Joanna Russell, they were the assistant coaches. This is something I tell players I've met, like a Jillian Alexander, Lisa Pugliese Lacroix, is, yeah, I played for Andy. It was one match. There was a small group of us that went from Boca Raton to West Hampton. That's going from Florida to New York. We get there in May. It's a cold, windy day. We were putting up windscreens. Guy pulls up in a fancy sports car. He's got the Italian clothes. He's got the gold jewelry. He's just dressed to fit the bill. It looks like he'd be in the cast of a Hollywood tennis movie. He wants a playing lesson. Andy tells him, we're not open. Come back on Monday. The guy was belligerent. He just was in Andy's face and he started to argue. So if 24-year-old Andy Brandy, next thing I know, with frozen feet and frozen hands, I'm playing this guy. At best, maybe this guy was 4-0. And at best, you know, maybe I was a 5-0 plus. I mean, certainly it was a much better tennis player. But at that moment, the match became the most important thing in Andy Brandy's life. I tell the Florida players that I've met, I feel like I experienced the intensity of a young Andy Brandy. Andy was pacing back and forth and telling me, Smith, you lose one game. And I heard it over and over again. Smith, you lose one game, you're fired. And the guy did have one game point. He had one game point, and one of those guys had a forehand grip, had no idea where the ball was going, wind's blowing. And fortunately enough that I didn't lose a game. But it was good. It was good to experience Andy Brandy. Let me tell you, my friend. So here's a few things, advice for coaches, teachers listening to this. Seek mentorship. Andy Brandy's mentors. I mean, certainly you just think about his older brother. You just think about, I mean, Charlie Passerell. It just goes on and on. Think about his teammates. What an amazing tennis background. But brought up by Welby Van Horn. He worked for Harry Hopman. He worked for Nick Baldessari. Some thank yous. This is something I learned from Andy Brandy. If you're ever in a player's box, don't touch your nose. The camera will catch you touching your nose. Here's something to thank Andy Brandy for. When he was working for Donald Dell, he sent Ray Schonke to me. Ray Schonke was the only player to play for the famous Vince Lombardi, the football coach, who was in Green Bay, took a year off, and then went to Washington. That's a reminder that Andy was in that Washington, D.C. area for a short period of time with Donald Dell. I mean, for me to meet a player who played for Lombardi, also played for George Allen and Tom Landry. Also, Andy Brandy sent Neil Anderson to me to work on, adult player. Both of them were adult tennis players, former NFLers. Neil Anderson, he played in the same backfield as Walter Payton with the Chicago Bears. Another thank you would be for Andy is that, you know, he connected me with Welby Van Horn. You know, everybody has a path in life and there's a branch. You go to your left, you go to your right. Where's it all going to lead to? And, I think people have to have a reflective thought, where would I be if I didn't work with Welby? Had an open invitation. And at one time it was just Joe, Andy was traveling. It was, then Andy's son, Chris, was born, but Joe was more on a permanent basis, not traveling as much, but had an open invitation to go to Hopman's. And this was back when I lived in a van, and for 1 year, I just played tournaments. And the next year, I traveled around the country just watching people teach tennis, coast to coast. Here's another thing. Having Nick Baltieri and Harry Hopman hire my students, because I was training tennis teachers, sight unseen. Sight unseen because of my background with really Andy Brandy, because I spent more time with Andy. Again, said it earlier, so fortunate to meet him at the age of 22. Being part or having a coaching tree means so much. I'm always baffled by a lot of people in tennis, you know, they don't have a coaching tree. I think there's way too much self-promotion. Like, where did you learn? A coaching tree, I think of two words. I think of roots and growth. I mean, how's it go with parents? Parents need to give their children roots and wings. So I owe a great deal to Andy Brandy, and so do the players and coaches I've trained. I know there's so many people teaching tennis that I've trained that they really can't say a complete sentence, or they can't, you know, a series of sentences making a paragraph without having an influence from Andy Brandy, Welby Van Horn, and down the line. You know, Nancy and Chris, as well as family and friends, my condolences. That's just a few thoughts. Andy Brandy said, you know, rest in peace. Let's just go through a few of those thoughts. You're taking some notes over there. What comes to your mind, Yvonne, so our listeners can get a little bit more out of this podcast?
A few things you mentioned. An assignment to see the final. This year's Australian Open, Sinner, Medvedev, and how Sinner only hit a one backhand volley. To double check that, and a good way of doing that is watching what's called a condensed match. And Australian Open has done a great job, and they do a better and better job every year with the technological side of tennis. And a great side on, they do a great job with a YouTube channel where I'm sure it's uploaded there, the condensed version of the final, where you can just watch it straight through point by point. No in between point time. So just point. And it's a great way to watch tennis. Another thing, just another small point I wrote down was you had trouble saying a Russian name. Most people do. I find it amazing. And it's actually a kind of an inside joke with my family, where whenever we listen to tennis on TV, it is guaranteed every Russian name by an American commentator will be said incorrectly, the last name. I mean, you can name anybody, people, they say Shapovalov, or Sharapova, it's actually Sharapova. So they always put the intonation in the wrong place. And you know, we always wonder with my family, like, what is that? Is that just a cultural thing? Is that like just American language forces the intonation in a certain vowel? But it's actually surprising how common. Like again, I said, I don't think there's one Russian last name that is said correctly on tour. Like Rybakina, I think they say instead of, or Rybakina. Yeah, it's not a blanket kind of like every commentary, but I've seen many, most, let's say, American commentators, they have that. So that's one other thing. I didn't quite jot down where this note came from, but we have up here in the mountain, Wintergreen, Virginia. We have some high schoolers that come up and, you know, we try and help them with their game. And they're just a joy to coach and train. And it's very different from an academy type of player that was raised in a, you know, a drill, go, 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 and goal-oriented, like, I want to achieve this by then. And they have, you know, high aspirations. And, you know, these kids, these high school players that come in, they are just playing because they love the game and they just want to get even a little bit better. And they're so appreciative of the information and it's just great. You know, I coach them. I haven't been coaching that long, but just I can just tell, like, oh, it's like these guys are amazing. I tell them to do one thing, they're like, yeah, okay, and then just do it. Would you agree with that, Steve, with the high school players?
Yeah, a couple of things to back up on names, though. Luis was just here from London, and you know, people are calling him Lewis. My name being so common, Steve Smith, people can get my name. I think a couple of things. One, there's a laziness in not learning the right pronunciation, but also think too is that I do think people get tired of someone, you know, calling them by a wrong name. I can't say the name correctly, but I give a shot. Petrus Kukimar. That's just way off. But anyway, we were teaching tennis and he said to a gentleman, what's your name? I think I get the first name a little bit closer in a second. He goes, Petrus. And the guy goes, okay, Peter. So that's always funny. Yeah, I'll come back to the high school thing, but with the center just hitting one backhand volley, that comes back to like a Welby Van Horn or a Jack Kramer. What would they say? Jack Kramer and Welby, they grew up together. Einstein. If you don't know the history of your subject, you don't know your subject. And well, the option to serve and volley, you know, for a player to bring him in, for a player to be able to be close to the baseline and hit a passing shot low. But no, I think that for me, if you say what's the best, the most enjoyable form of tennis instruction, you're referring to these high school students. I used to love to teach PE classes on the Tyler Junior College campus for 10 years, decade through the 80s. And, you know, many times to teach the tennis teachers, I would teach, you know, 24 people by myself, or we could break it into privates. And, but they came out in no expectations. I love that from Switek's mental coach, high standards and low expectations. Just do what you're asked. You know, granted, they just come out for the credit. And, you know, when we first film people, we say, when you first are critiqued, don't think about your game, just to think about the game. You know, don't freak out. Don't panic like you're on the Titanic. Here's some adjustments where you could hit the ball more efficiently. Doesn't mean that you have to change. Doesn't mean that there's one way. It's not dogmatic. No, the game. So, you know, you look at some film, okay, prevention of injury is a reason. Also, just simply get better. But then can you look at some film and go on and look on the other side of the net? again, taking a deep dive last week, Lisa Puglisi Lacroix, so many things you can look about, you know, her journey or what she's doing now with love serving autism. But Randy Brandy's asked about Welby Van Horn. Once you see it, you can't unsee it. You know, to have an analytical eye, you know, then again, there's more similarities among the top coaches that I've studied on than the differences. Vic Braden almost lost his life being in the rafters. He went from Monroe, Michigan, he hitchhiked up to Detroit, had a chance to see Don Budge, put himself in the rafters, and he was going to shoot from above, looking down, and almost fell out of the rafters. Braden would tell you, take a piece of paper like this, you just roll it up like, you know, you've got a telescope, and just look at someone's feet. You walk into a stadium, close your eyes, say, just open your eyes and look for red. Close your eyes and open your eyes, just look for blue. We talk about so many things. Filming, with Andy Brandy back in the 70s, when I was working for him, we use reel to reel. And I can remember, I'm not a techie, wasn't then, not now, but there's a certain type of tape, like it wasn't quite Scotch tape. And then I would be, you know, the reel going backwards, and we would look at like the craziest strokes for the people that week Like, can you believe this is how they swing at the ball? And then they're there for a week, a tennis camp. Like, let's go to work. But we use film. One of my favorite books is an English book written by one of the Matrams, a famous English tennis family. 104 pages. You've seen it. And you just flick it and go 1,000, 2,000. It's just like the old penny arcade where, you know, it's such and such film, you know, something from the Wild Wild West or whatever. And it's just one frame after the next. And then you relate it to how the human eye sees. The high school kids come out. And the Aussies, no worries, mate. No worries, mate. What else?
Just more on Andy. Lisa in the previous podcast called Andy small but mighty. Andy called himself demanding, a tough cookie, lifelong learner. That's what you called him. He called you up regarding Federer, something I wrote down. I enjoyed on balance in an off balance position. And I like this quote, I wrote it down. If you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. Humility. I didn't know Andy, but listening to you and how you talk so passionately about Andy, I'm certain he was a great coach and a great person.
Yeah, the energy is, you know, Roy Emerson, the great Aussie, you'll never be bigger than the game. And then, you know, what can you give to the game? Last week with Lisa Pugliese Lacroix, where, you know, Andy was so excited about what she was doing. You know, that was obviously Andy was, you know, I mean, you know, it's like Jay Berger, amazing tennis background, went to Clemson. And played for Chuck Creasy, who was a guest on our podcast. And he worked with Jay when he was younger than Andy. When he went to the USTA, Jay was in charge. And then before he passed away, he was working at Jay's club. I think it's in West Palm. And, you know, just think at that level, conversations with tennis people, the people have been in the game for a long, long time. With us, you know, certainly grip, swing, body, great base, you know, people will look at our content and go, oh, there's no racket at speed. Oh, it's so slow. You know, all the different things, don't judge the unfinished product, but you know, that's just the connection. For me, again, very fortunate to meet Andy Brandy and, you know, that connection to Welby Van Horn. And, you know, I had some students that went to work for Welby and they said, why are you so high in Welby Van Horn? Welby Van Horn would teach the serve. He would tell people, put the racket in the tray position. Just be totally palm up. But he'd have them with the right stance, the difference between the deuce court and the ad court. He'd have them go very slow. Say it's a right-hander, the toss be low and out to the right, and they would end up on balance. And they would, the 3-8 system, they would be facing forward. And when they finished, the racket would be over on this side and they'd still have a forehand grip. It wouldn't be on edge. So he's an artist. People, let me explain to you what he's doing that's so amazing. People go, oh, you know, he's teaching them palm up. He's teaching them with a forehand grip. Actually, he's letting them initially hit with a semi-western grip. And what Welby would do is teach the serve last because he didn't want kids to play games. You know, he had them play all sorts of mini tennis. But, you know, kids aren't going to really learn to bomb aces until they get way down the road. Like, I don't know. I know zero about baseball, but you throw a kid a proper throwing motion with simple mechanics before you start talking about the curveball and this and that. So he has somebody on balance. They have rhythm. They have a low toss out to the right. And then now he needs to just introduce the continental grip and just deal with the swing. Because they're, you know, now they have a framework. They're on balance. But I would say this, and that's where the listeners coming back to Andy, who did so many things with, you know, like you said, he was, you know, during those early years, you got to pay your dues. We were working with basically adult players. You know, and Andy, we're young, and, you know, I'd give him a hard time. You know, he's Brandy. I don't think he'd eat two rackets for this one. He'd go out and be carrying rackets. He'd have on wristbands because it wasn't, he had been playing and now he's coaching. But he grew up and, you know, right away, I mean, he had the discipline to be on time and everything was going to be super organized. But I mean, he's 24 years old. So, I mean, it wasn't very, but he grew up in tennis. He was just born into it. And, you know, he was out giving lessons. I hope you were on the other side when he camps. And with this place in West Hampton, there was one single court. And it actually, just like with Welby Van Horn, it had a window. And, you know, Andy would teach hour after hour. And he'd be on that court for the most part. He'd be up at the crack of dawn, go for a run, but just, but I think people run away from teaching a beginner. Those are people I like, I don't teach beginners. And, you know, that's where we certainly are not in favor of people being out at the local tournaments and handing out business cards. Of course, Lisa, you know, she says she's 5'11". Yeah, Andy wasn't the biggest guy, but, you know, it comes down to how's it go? It's not the size of the fight and the dog. It's size. How's it go?
It's not the size of the dog in the fight, but the size of the fight in the dog.
Yeah. But to create a championship culture like he did at Florida. Now, I mean, there's a lot of people with the USTA or people, you know, like I think when he was with Harold Solomon, that's where he worked with Dementieva, who, you know, won the gold medal and ranked, I think, 2, could be 3, our fact checker. But the Brandys. Andy Brandy. What else you got? Anything else?
No, just this list of accomplishments and awards and championship titles that's in front of me here. Just wow. What a life to live to get this type of pedigree of stats. It's amazing.
There was a time where there was a televised match, and I should be able to tell you the two players, Sean Stratford, Jill Kravis. I mean, that's just a guess. But, you know, ESPN shows Andy, and he's the NCAA Finals. He's got two players that are playing each other. The interview beforehand, he says, no, I'm just going to go to the highest place in the stadium and just watch. And, but so fortunate, again, and anybody who's following the Great Bays, you know, again, a big thank you to Andy Brandy, everything he stood for, and what a life. You know, I know we're getting closer to having Welby Van Horn's book up on the website. Any comments on that?
Yes. There's no current PDF that's available. We're in contact with the authors, Ed Weiss and Stu Van Horn and his brother as well, Bryce Van Horn. But they are in the process of creating the PDF so we can upload it. So it will be up and we'll put out posts when it is up so you guys will know.
Yeah, and it's going to be for free. And I think one thing is also the legalities and having terms that certainly don't want to have people download it and sell it.
You know, yeah.
Like anything that can go wrong. Murphy, he was an optimist. Dr. Joyce Brothers. Anything can go wrong. Dr. Joyce Brothers said that Murphy was an optimist. How's it go? Anything that can go wrong will go wrong.
Yeah.
And but no, again, thanks for Lisa last week. She touched upon Andy's life. And I just think that you know, these people that pass is, you know, was it really captured? You know, Vic Braden would always film things and always recommended to film things. You know, we do that. Certainly that's where we can reach out and talk about fundraising. We'd like to do a much better job. Like to keep doing the same thing, but do it better. But accountability, just documenting. Okay? No substitute for a good beginning. And it's, you know, just if someone who was introduced to tennis the way Joe Brandy, Andy Brandy, Manny Diaz were, it's going to allow you to play solid doubles. You know, Vic Braden theme is, you know, I want my players to be able to hit every shot from every position of the court, every surface, singles or doubles. And you know, I can remember Vic being very curious and asking me about Welby and vice versa. And, you know, Welby at the nursing home, the extended care in Lantana, Florida, where, you know, you were there when we interviewed Stuart's son, correct?
I was, yeah.
And, yeah, to carry the torch, you know, tennis needs help. Tennis needs help. And it's not an easy sport. With going on and on, Jeannie Bouchard, she came out and said, well, it's completely different. You know, I guess she was saying, somebody showed me that today, pickleball is more difficult than tennis. And yeah, our sport's being invaded. Now that pickleball's here, but again, all these podcasts we have, they're all interconnected. Like say, listening to a Rachel Rohrabacher, just take a minute and go on YouTube and watch her play pickleball. And the reason that she's very good at pickleball, there's so many reasons. Her parents have done a very good job. But I'll end with this. If I hadn't met Andy and Joe Brandy, you know, I mean, I don't see a Rachel Rohrabacher being grinded on what she grew up doing. Welby Van Horn, we did them today. Going out, drop hitting, holding your balance. Static balance has become obsolete. And, got a young boy visiting here from Florida, and I told a mom whose daughter has won a couple national titles is here. And I said, wouldn't it be great if 10,000 kids in the U.S. swung at the ball like that? I said, wouldn't it even be greater if 10,000 teachers understood how he got that base? And with the passing of Andy Brandy, and so many people adored and loved Andy Brandy, is, you know, go back to his history, and part of his history for sure. His entrance into the game was through Welby Van Horn, tennis instruction. But anyway, 185. Thanks, Lisa, for last week on this. Thanks, Yvonne. Give me the high five. As we say, this one's in the books. Adios, amigos. Andy Brandy, great for the game. Rest in peace.